Well, the compensation was to be responsible for bank failures, and it was a little controversial finding in that paper. Today, you know, as I listen to all of you, you know, what you are doing, you know, it's really exciting. I have never been in a room with so much experience and so much, you know, diversity of experience in what you have done. So I would like that, you know, we have a conversation rather than meet each other, So what I would like to do is tell me a little bit about my research and then, you know, give me your opinion. What do you think? Am I on the right track, or if I could, you know, extend my research, that would be another thing that I could do on this paper. So the paper that I'm going to discuss today is essentially outside of CEO succession and firm performance. So I'm looking at whether CEO, so when you're hiring a CEO, obviously you have to make some decision about the firm. And when you choose a CEO, it's a very serious decision for a firm, because the CEO is going to determine how the firm is going to behave, how it's going to turn out in the next few years, right? And we'll have a very long-term consequence. And what I would look at essentially, you know, when you are choosing a CEO, do you go outside of the firm, outside of the industry? Okay. Let me give you a little bit of theoretical background in this academic way that we understand the succession issue. If you are hiring from inside the firm, why are you hiring someone from inside the firm? What do you think? If you are hiring someone from inside the firm, why would you hire someone that works in your own company?
Consistent strategy is exactly what it should be. How far should you reach customers?
Continuity, yeah.
However, if you see the competitive landscape changing dramatically, if you can't do it without a subject like yours and not think about diversion or MMMs, you want somebody who is in a position to know who you want rather than where you fit.
Exactly. So continuity is a big part, that, you know, you like what the company is doing, you like what they're doing. So that's a big part of it. What else? What else do you think would make a company look inside?
Somebody already knows the company. Somebody you are, and you already know.
Another thing, you know, one direction that, you know, we see quite often is sort of what we call this tournament behavior, that you hire a bunch of people and, you know, over time you want to give them another incentive so they, you know, become, every year they get a promotion, the best of them will get a promotion, ultimately will become the CEO. So you essentially create an incentive, and, you know, the person, and you also observe that person, and if the person is doing a really good job, then yeah, you know, the person becomes CEO at some point. Okay, so that's your human behavior. Now, most of the firms do that. There's an overwhelming number of the firms essentially hire someone who has some experience within the firm. Whether it's 2 year, 3 year experience, or it's a long-term experience. You know, sometimes you would hire someone at a VP level, and then say, oh, after 3-4 years, you'll become the CEO. Yes, it will depend. You know, if you have a more established firm, yes, you are probably going to do a larger firm, you're going to do that more frequently than if a smaller firm. Okay. So the other spectrum, let's say around 60% of the firms that do that, let's say around 40% actually go outside and find someone in outside. So, of course, when you are going outside, all those considerations about, you know, human behavior or, you know, someone with experience with the company is no longer a big issue. At that point, you have actually chosen someone who is outside of the firm. Okay? So, what I do, what we do in this research, we essentially divide up the outsiders into two different groups. One group of outsiders will be from within the same industry. That means you have friends, you have competitors. So what happens? You know, you actually know something about the industry. You know how other companies within the industry are doing. And then the second group that we essentially serve divide the CEOs into is outside of the industry. So why do you do that? If you are inside of the industry, you have close knowledge of how the production process works, et cetera, et cetera. You know that how the firm is supposed to work. So if you are hiring someone from the industry, that person doesn't have a direct experience in that industry, in that particular industry. So why do you hire that person? What we term, we say there is a general ability. So essentially general leadership that you can run a company. So they are CEOs, so they know how to run companies. So there's a more general experience versus if you have someone from the same industry, they have some specific industry experience. So they will obviously have CEO qualities, the leadership qualities and how to run a company. But the industry insiders, they will have some specific knowledge about the industry. So that's our categories that we look at. And we look at, well, who are the people that hire from outside of the industry, from inside the industry. Then we look at, well, if you're hiring from outside of the industry, are they doing well? Are they performing well? What are the changes that they're making within the firm in terms of some specific variables? And then how is the market reacting to all of those things? So this is essentially what we do, and we will have some findings. Let me start with the most interesting one, which is a stock reaction. So stock market obviously reacts on the day that the CEO is announced. What do you think? How do you think stock market reacts to hiring an insider versus hiring an outsider? Or the stock market like that? Who do they like more?
Depends on the company's personality or problems. There's a change CEO brought in to improve something, and nothing might last well. The disturbance inside that company, the market probably wants to settle down.
Yeah, you want
that man to come in and accomplish that, and it is totally right. Yeah.
I'm a little skeptical. I would say that the market reaction would probably range somewhere between bad and worse. So much uncertainty when the firm is making a transition. There's so many things that could go wrong. Even if there are some grades in concept, Jason Kenney, for instance, has taken a very successful product leader. And then the firm was trying to reposition itself and do that to the other part.
I was involved with a company that was a public company. It was already really, it was having some troubles, and it was financially oriented, and so they were already well. And so they took a somewhat radical move, and they brought in a CEO who was completely outside of the company management consulting. And the market was reacting to it. He did a pretty good job. He had a lot of work to do, but he took that risk. It worked.
I mean, obviously,
you
Did you also from the research perspective think about how long that impacted in the market then? Like that?
Yes. Okay. So essentially there's two parts to it. The first part is when we don't have a CEO, like this is uncertain times, as you mentioned. But this is really uncertain times. So the stop signs are very, very poor before the CEO. They don't have a leader. So no company, on average, right? It's not going to be for every company. But on average, the stock market, you know, the stocks are not doing very well. So what we look at is look at about 30 days before. So essentially, we start looking at 30 days before how the stock starts performing. And obviously, the CEO is not hired immediately, right? You know, essentially, this is a long process. People start to know about it. People start to, you know, go out and trade on the basis of it. So there are some expectations that are built up for that stock. So we look at, from 30 days, yeah, the stock price actually starts to go up because the market is expecting that this uncertainty is going to get resolved. So even 30 days before, stock, both of them, you know, whether you are inside the industry or outside the industry, stocks start going up. And then on the particular day, there's an announcement, right? This is the silent default concern. So on that day, both Google and CEOs get a positive reaction. Okay? Stock price goes up for both groups. And both of them, actually, you know, you also look at the next 30 days, yes, they still continue to go up. Okay? So essentially, the market is reacting to this uncertainty being resolved. But there's one group, which is, if you're hiring from within the industry, you're actually getting a more positive reaction. Okay? So why? The way you understand it, or you can explain it, well, you have someone who knows how the company should be run. Yeah? You have some technical expertise, industry-specific knowledge. So the market actually reacts more positively if you are hired from within the same industry. And if you are hiring someone who is totally outsider, then market thinks that, oh, it's more of a risky job. So the positive reaction is not as much. So, what we do, we look at the company's performance, right? Essentially, 30 days is not, you know, this is just guessing, right? What's going to happen? So we look at 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. Mm-hmm. So here's the interesting part. The same industry CEOs, there's an immediate, new failure, as if, you know, that they're going to do better, or, you know, there's more confidence in that. So we look at, well, on the first year, how did they do? Essentially, we look at, you know, managers' outcome. So, you know, since they're looking at, you know, the excess return that they're achieving. The first year, we do see that the industry insiders, they're creating a better outcome than industry outsiders. Second year, it's about the same. Third year, the industry outsiders are actually doing better than industry insiders. And then we look at the fourth year. Again, industry outsiders are doing better than industry insiders. So we consider it a little bit counterintuitive that the industry outsiders are actually ending up doing a better job than industry insiders. And the way that, you know, we understand that what our guess is, if you're trying to change, right, this company is not doing very well. So if you're trying to change that, bring someone who is not actually doing some radical changes.
I'm really sure is that you see that there are three categories for doing it. The insiders are from the The outsiders who are from the same industry, and the outsiders who are from different industries. Do you have, Jeremy, any data about how the insider and the insiders do compared to the outsiders who are from the same industry?
We don't. That's a group we left out, essentially. Because there's a lot of research on that, so we don't particularly address that part. So we're just looking at outsiders.
And this is when you're looking into and out. What correlation? What
Essentially, yeah, that is that stock price doing better than, you know, the index or some risk adjusted return. One, I thought, when we look at it, we're essentially looking at arbitrage pricing theory, trying to figure out how does the stock price react to some factors. One of the risk factors is the size of the firm, right? Is the firm, you know, if you have a big firm, it is going to have a different set of characteristics than if you have a small firm. Big firm is probably going to have be more mature. And if you have a smaller firm, it's going to be more growth-oriented firm. Then there's another, essentially another, factor is how the market is performing. Is the market going up or market going down? But one other factor is the momentum, the stock price. You know, usually what happens is the price keeps going up, it tends to go up. If it's going down, it tends to go down. So essentially just looking at, you know, getting rid of the effects of those outside factors, what is left over? And we assign that part to the manager. It might be the manager who is doing something that is creating something more than the index. So that was interesting part. The second set of results that we look at is that, well, who are those people getting hired? And who is hiring all those outsiders? So usually if you are from a large industry, you know, if you have an industry where there's a lot of different firms, you can say an industry with a lot of different firms, so you have more substitutes. But you know, you can hire a CEO who is more of, you know, who has some inside knowledge. So at that point, you are not really going to go outside. So that's more, you know, intuitive. That, you know, essentially, if you have no choice, why would you go outside? So that's one of those things. And when you hire an outsider, you're not really hiring, you know, an outsider who has never worked anywhere else. Right? You're actually looking for an outsider who has some additional experience. So essentially, even though this guy is industry outsider, or this person is industry outsider, you want them to have some that idea of experience, that they have work, you know, they have experience working in other areas. Now, what do they change? What are the changes when they come and essentially, you know, the industry insiders and industry outsiders, how are they changing the firm? What we find is that if you are from industry insider, you are taking more debt. And with all the implications of debt, you know, when you take debt, you're making the firm more risky and all these other things, right? So you're taking on more debt if you're an industry insider. If you're an industry outsider, not so much debt. What are you doing, essentially? Another thing, if you're an industry insider versus an industry outsider, the industry outsider will actually be investing more in the firm. So essentially increasing investment. So that's one of those. Industry insider, what happens is that the industry insider is actually increasing sales. You see that the amount of sales is going up. Okay. Industry outsider, not so much. It's going up about that much. Now, then we look at profit, right? Sales is not everything, right? If you're selling more, it doesn't make you more profitable. So industry insiders, they're increasing sales, but their profit is actually down. And industry outsiders are not selling as much, but their profit margin is actually growing. So we interpret that as something that is, you know, that will come to a change in that time that is probably resulting into that outperformance for industry outside. They're talking about dividends. They end up paying you dividends.
Is that
that point?
He said about the outsider and the usual possible, they do expect to make them.
Mm-hmm.
Because that person comes in and doesn't have a way of thinking about the cars and the brain, and so they find spots probably that could change.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to talk about before, or, and so to make some kind of shuffling that probably doesn't happen.
We'll look at it totally from a new perspective, not hesitant to cut anything off.
The first thing that outsider versus insider, may also be differentiating terms that we use in more defensive approach versus terms that we more change. And so, maybe we should know what is company rank distributed, whatever color you may choose to define that. And if it's something like the top quartile firm, probably even if we're looking inside, probably not be able to do that change, probably the profit dynamics are pretty good. They don't need a lot of the financial or organizational kind of change. So if it's going outside, that indicates that things haven't been going properly with group behavior.
I'm wondering whether saying insider versus outsider, is that a surrogate for differentiating what kind of, what's the background of the person who runs the CEO? So if I was on their board and said, you know, we need somebody who's not going to be our technology leader, but we need somebody who's going to optimize our financial strategy as a company.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's what the person's going to be, then they don't need to be an expert in either the technology or know all the customers, because the board may be deciding that the resources of the company are not being very well effectively and efficiently employed, and so therefore they want somebody who's going to think more of this as a, how about financial structure, are we managing cash flow, all that sort of thing. I'm hoping to simplify. But I'm kind of wondering whether just differentiating between the insider and outsider is capturing what are the more important variables, but maybe not being clear about what the actual variables are that are driving the differences.
Mm-hmm. 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 No, that is one of the things that we consider overall hard to find out what exactly the motivation. This is why that's how what differentiates the insider versus outsider. And one of the things that you mentioned as well, that every company is going to have a different reason for bringing someone from outside. That now that would be a great future research topic. Looking at what exactly is the reason given. Yes.
This is a question for you. There's also a question for everybody about this. There's a fairly well-known book from Dick the Great that a lot of people have read, and so it was a research book by somebody from Colorado, and it was saying, contrary to the popular mythology that if you have a company with trouble, you should go to hire an outsider. So the results actually are, if you have a company with trouble, your best salvation is to hire an insider. Because the insider knows where the rock is and the place for the phone. And he gives the example, I think her name was Anne McCauley at Xerox. She was like CFO at Xerox, and the board was, Xerox was in a sort of turmoil situation. And hiring the CFO of a company that was going downhill seemed to be a ludicrous thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But she just really pulled a rabbit out of the hat, and then took nobody else but her to have done that. she knew where the bodies were buried. She knew where the problems were. I was wondering, what are your thoughts about that?
I think it's very difficult if you have a senior management group that's worked together for a long period of time, for one of those people to then step up and say, well, okay, you know, you and you have got to go, we're going to have to do this. It's culturally difficult to do that, and that's why, if that's really what you need to do, I think it's better to bring an outsider who doesn't have that kind of personal culture. I mean, it's kind of ruthless thing to say, but...
Well, she had other objections to that.
Very much the exception that proves the rule. You wouldn't expect an insider to be able to pull right around and not get on the patent. If you've got a company that's really in trouble, to me the paradigm is, well, you call up the consultant, say you prove out or the safety, whatever, because the board's got to find a place to hide or they don't have the right answer. And then they say, okay, they come up with a strategy, or they come up with a strategy to find a CEO who's going to have a strategy, and it's got to be, you know, something different, because obviously what Xerox is doing isn't working. So you end up going not even inside the industry, not sure what the Xerox industry could be defined as, but the only discussion was to what is the industry in the Xerox system. But in reality, if you have disaster, then what you have is we need a new strategy. We need someone, therefore, who is not tied with your old strategy, and you're much more inclined to have someone outside the industry. But I think it does depend on what the industry is and how dire the situation is. In other words, if it really has many, many participants, and therefore there's a huge amount of expertise out there in other companies in the same industry, then in fact, I would think there would be less of an incentive to go to an outsider than to a more modest number of participants in But again, the question of, is the board just think we need a brand new strategy? And if they do, they're much more likely to go to someone outside the industry.
I think CEOs can be, generally are purveyors of hope and great ideas and the promise that this could be a great thing. And I think CFOs tend to be not very emotional about these things, and it ain't working and I'm cutting it. And that comes from this, and that's my first experience. My CFO, he's like, we're going to do this thing, and I think in this journey, we have tried it to untouchable or take the time, but in my mind, it's like a promise future. But when you look at it ain't working, and you remove the CFO, great, I know exactly where the bodies are, and we're going to go in there, and we're going to throw it all out really fast. So I think in a situation where it comes in trouble, having inside of today is not going to be emotionally challenged to just cut. Somebody knows exactly what cut that would be. I don't know if that type of a profile can increase enough stuff that's really good. Yeah,
exactly. I think you know the various levels of trouble, or definition of trouble. I mean, Jamie Dimon has a different level of trouble.
That's
somebody else who's fighting you still.
Right. I saw Andy calling many years ago, and I don't remember. She explained to us what she had done. She was a very dynamic person. She was, no offense to any of us, but she was. She really had a lot of qualities as a CEO and was really someone that they put a lot of trust in, and she described kind of what she had to do and how she had to make the business different. She knew where the bodies were going, but she also had a good opinion of being a great CEO.
Now, of course, an important part is, if you're a travel company, are you the person who is causing the trouble? If you get promoted as the CEO, then nothing is changing. So essentially, that's our finding, and we went to one last step, which was just looking at compensation, and how it was getting compensated. Essentially, what we found is that if you are an industry insider, you're taking more in salary. Okay? In terms of you're taking more in salary and less in the riskier compensation types, like bonus or stock option. Versus if you are an outsider, you are getting more of bonus and stock compensation. So essentially, what we interpreted as being an indicator that even though someone from within the industry, when that person comes in, the firm is already troubled, so they know to, I'm going to negotiate a contract where I get paid first and not make it too much subject to volatility of the market. And an outsider, when that person comes in, just said, oh, I know I'm going to turn it around and I'm going to take stock up. And what essentially happens at the end, as consistent with our story, is at the end, the industry outsiders, they do a good job of turning around the company, and they get more money. So their total compensation can go to be much higher than the total compensation of industry insiders.
You obviously deal and dealt with public companies.
Yes, of course, of course.
Do you have any sense of what the paradigm is outside the inside on privately owned companies?
Oh, I have to claim my ignorance on that. Because when you're a private company, of course, at that point, it becomes much harder for your compensation to be tied to stock performance. So at that point, essentially, yeah.
You know, the motivating force of changing that CEO, you've seen behavioral differences or which you've got better with as opposed to this statistical research?
If you're a private company, I'd say you behave the same, very similarly. Because, you know, if you're trying to change something, it doesn't matter whether you're a public company or a private company. But if you're a private company, you still have to change something. And what we are seeing again and again is the changes that are brought about by the new CEO are much more radical if you are outside of the industry. So you're changing much more. One thing I would say is that, you know, the difference between, you know, when you're a CEO and you're looking at policies, right, you can try to change short-term policy. You can say financial engineering, and I would do this, you know, that's going to obviously have an effect. You know, if I take more debt, the stock price will go up, right? So those are short-term things that you can do, versus if, you know, the long-term things, for example, you can invest more in R&D, right? These are extremely volatile, but in the long run, I think that should bring you more, there's more chance of making something.
You know, there's another variable which I'm not hearing you address, but it seems to me an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the industry knowledge of the board itself.
Mm.
Because board members go in varying degrees of ignorance. And let me go into one extreme, the nonprofit. On the nonprofit side, you typically, every time you do a CEO, you're going to go outside because these organizations are so poorly financed. There is no development, there is no finish point, there's really no way to take over. So you got to go outside. So, okay, so you're now on a mental health group. What do you know about mental health?
Right.
What do you know about mental health? So if somebody on that board is going to say, what the hell, look at somebody who's going to talk about mental health here. I don't think so. Then you go to a private business. It's not as extreme as the nonprofit, but also these varying degrees of ignorance.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. some companies, you have board members who actually come from the industry or from allied communities. And that may be kind of an extreme side, but they could take somebody who's outside the industry and they kind of, they know that the guy's going to go off the deep end. But particularly if you're a mental health field, you get somebody who's from a private equity firm. Now, when we're doing research, one of the things we're actually looking for is that if we could get the bios of all the board members, that there are some limitations on that. We're getting a lot more information on CEOs than the board members. But one of the things we did,
I'm sure data science is doing a conversation. I worked at the same time as the next committee when John Lee succeeded in all the research. And after he was in the job for a year or two, I re-proposed the board. If his compensation is, as you described, the outsider compensation. However, he wanted that compensation plan to the entire executive letter of defense, because he had 50 people. And so he adopted it for about a year. And he made it a big civil war. I was in the company with his sister. And go back to the traditional compensation plan. So basically, they paid a very nice living wage in cash. Everything else was city stock, and it was
I don't think that necessarily not being an expert, the fact that you're not as much of an expert as the people working in the company doesn't make you a poor board member. I think it's rather what you bring, the broader insights and a willing to challenge and say, okay, what the heck does this really mean? That's where your value is as a board member.
I would agree with you.
And I guess in my own defense, I guess this level of ignorance, I mean, I know nothing about the coffee industry, but I do know some good basic, I've got some good basic business skills and good consumer marketing background. I think I could be on the board of consumer coffee company, even though I really don't know that. I would be very reluctant to be on the board of a mental health company if I didn't know something about mental health care. I'm not sure I can describe it, but the basic business skills can be applied in a number of settings. Then you get into a situation where it's really difficult, it's really not the same. And I don't know where you cross that. Yeah. Now, we did look at a few of the buildings.